Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
It is Tuesday morning. It is Tuesday, the 6th of June. You're listening to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs program with a panel discussing the issues of the day. Joining me on today's panel is regular guest Mark Connor. I said very regular guest now. This is the second or third time you've been on,
yeah,
Mark. Good morning.
Yeah. Hi there. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. And we're a two-hander today. So we're also joined by our regular correspondent, Nathan Thomas. Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning, Giles.
If you wish to get involved with the show, 952-784-4000 is the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. We also tweet on TRE Talk is good. We're going to start off, as we seem to be starting off quite frequently, at least in the past month, with the tale of yet another terror attack. As you will be aware, Saturday night there was an incident, a terror attack on London Bridge, followed by stabbings in Borough Market. Here we are again, panel. Once again, it seems that London has been the, and another UK city has been the subject of a terror attack. This one perhaps a little more low tech. But still the reverberations carry on. Nathan.
A little low-tech, but in many ways just as frightening because, again, it is such a simple thing that they did. I mean, it's ram people with a vehicle and then use knives. How do you stop that? And it is just more and more difficult to even imagine how you can do that. I mean, there's a lot of talk now about, oh, these people were, or at least two of them we know now, were known to police, and everybody uses that as a reason. Oh, well, something should have happened. But the question is, what is supposed to happen? There's talk now that the one was known to the police in 2005, and they investigated him and found no reason or found no evidence that he was planning or doing anything that they could arrest him for or hold him or do anything. I mean, he may have had views that were not popular. He may have had extreme views, but it didn't reach the level of anything that you could do anything about. So they put him in that group of people, well, he's not really maybe very nice, but there's nothing we can do about it, so we kind of keep an eye on him, sort of. And now they're saying, oh, well, they should have known in 2005 what he was going to do in 2017, which is putting a burden on the police and security forces that I think is just ridiculous. I mean, we act as if anyone who is a terrorist is really stupid.
Mm.
And we may feel that in some ways, but they're not all. A lot of them are very smart and putting together things that they put together. But the point is, anybody who really thinks long-term at all that I'm going to do something to harm this society because of the way I feel or whatever, the first thing you're going to think about is not tell everybody that you're going to do it in a month, 6 months, a week, a day, or whatever. So the smart ones keep quiet. They know enough to act like a reasonably normal person and not attract attention to the police and so on. Now, they may have attracted some attention. Yes, they were known to authorities. But the smart ones, you know, keep under the radar enough that they're not discovered. It's the dumb ones who go sit in the local coffee shop or whatever and talk to people about how they're going to do this, that, or the other thing. Those are the ones that get caught before anything happens. But you know, the smart ones, the same way if you're going to rob a bank, you don't sit around and discuss it with the general public that in a month we're going to rob the such and such bank. You're smart enough to keep quiet about it. And it's very hard for the police to know things are going to happen, even for the community. I mean, your neighbors don't know what you're doing.
I mean, there has been a lot of talk about, what we know at the moment is that the Met Police have defended the decision to downgrade the inquiry into one of the men who carried out the attack on Saturday. Karambut was born in Pakistan, but was living in Barking. He was known to police in the MI5, but there was no evidence of a plot, as you said before. The other attacker, Rashid Redor, Joanne, basically, he is believed to be from Morocco. He had been in Ireland, and Irish police, the Gardaí, said they hadn't been following him. They had no records. So these are people who, are coming. So, the other two may have come totally off the radar in terms of surveillance. Mark, your thoughts so far?
They're saying that the chap that went to Ireland, he got married to an Irish or British person. That's as literally as much as they know. Do you know what? I think the big problem here isn't so much the fact that we don't know what's going on. Obviously, everybody knows what's going on. Everyone knows exactly what's going on, and we know where it stems from. And yes, it isn't. Obviously, it's not all Muslims. That's a given, without any. But there is fundamentalists that are doing this from that particular religion, and that's unfortunate for them. You know, unfortunate for the Muslim community, because they are all going to get tarred with the same brush regardless. What can we do about it? Well, my views are quite well known on this. I am of the opinion that if you are on a watch list of any description, you are asked politely to leave. Full stop.
Leave the country, you mean?
I mean deport them, yes.
Deport to where? But where would you deport them?
To wherever they are originally from or their ancestry is from.
Right, so if you had, for example, there was the Manchester bombers from Libya, so you'd send him back to Libya?
Absolutely.
Right, okay.
What about the ones that are British citizens?
That's what I said, from wherever their ancestry is from. The absolute second that anybody makes a decision to support or be a part of in any way ISIS, ISIL, Daesh, whatever you want to call it, in my opinion, should immediately negate them from having British citizenship. Full stop.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
But how do you know that? How do you know when they? We don't know whether these people necessarily have joined.
If you're on a watch list, you're on a watch list for a reason. They don't pick a name out of a hat. You're there for a reason. And I'm sorry. And I've had a lot of conversations with people about this. People are saying to me, "Oh, but you know, how can you just? You don't know that they're going to do anything. No, you don't." But what you do know is, if they're not in the country, they won't be able to.
No, that's true. It's just who gets to decide this is enough to deport.
It's not about being enough. It's the fact that, look.
Well, but you get on a watch list because somebody calls the police and says, "I think my neighbor is doing bad things." The police, I mean, they then start to examine them.
I get where you're going in this.
And if
one.
I don't like you, I can get you put on a watch list and with your idea, get you deported.
Look, I do see there are flaws in my argument, obviously. But at the same time, surely to remove the source of the problem, it's not going to stop terrorism. It's not going to stop it. But what it will do, it will massively, massively lessen the chance. Because if you were to get rid of all the people that are on these, look, there's 700 on a close watch list. Yeah. There's 3,000 on a watch list, and you know, probably 20,000.
And there are 20,000 that are on a watch list, just not watched very closely, because there's no way to watch 20,000 people closely.
That's fair enough. I get that.
But so in your world, they would all just be sent somewhere, even if they were born in the UK.
Even if they were born in the UK.
And their grandfather is...
Look, I know I'm going to get hammered for this.
No, I'm not hammering you.
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about people phoning in.
Well, it's one way of doing things, but there's got to be somebody who sits there and says, at what point do you go on this deportation list as opposed to, because you're on the watch list because they're watching you. If they don't see you do anything and they're watching
but
you for 6 months.
That's my point. It's not even so much as fact. Look, Theresa May and to an extent, even Donald Trump and Sadiq Khan and all these guys, they wring their hands on the television. They say, our thoughts and prayers go out to the loved ones of all these people that have been affected by this atrocity. And it does. That's a political must. You have to say that regardless of how you feel. But it is, that doesn't do anything. Having a concert doesn't actually do anything, with the exception perhaps of making some people feel a bit better. And I get that. I do. And it raises money and whatever, and maybe a bit of awareness. But it doesn't do anything to the actual cause of the problem.
No.
And that's the problem. We are now getting to the point where we are so desensitized to this. We're starting off again, yet again, with another.
Indeed. Because in the past 3 months, we've had, in UK cities, we've had three major attacks.
Which is horrendous. And the problem with the big problem is that we are now becoming desensitized to it. It's yet another problem that you're going straight across saying, oh yeah, whatever, you know, has happened, and we're really, really sorry, but we'll carry on regardless.
And we've got a call. 952-784-4000 is the phone number if you want to get involved with the conversation. Good morning, caller. You're live on Viewpoint. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, my name's Peter. I'm calling from the A7, just passing Fuengirola Cos.
Good morning to you, Peter.
And driving carefully with Bluetooth. 2 points. There was a very interesting article in yesterday's Telegraph by a professor of something or other, one of the American places, but British chap, suggesting that we ought to reintroduce the old-fashioned crime of treason. Plotting against the state, plotting to overthrow the state. Treason. Good old-fashioned thing. And we should come down with the full force of the law. We can't execute people as we used to do for treason, but we can lock them up for life. And it should mean life. Life forever. No parole. No chance of parole.
Okay, please.
And then, with foreign-born people, you can deport them. British people, you can lock them up and leave them there. Second point.
Yes, please go on.
We're not reacting quickly enough to people. If I go onto the internet and start downloading child pornography, the police and the world will come down on me like a ton of bricks, and I'll be locked up and my computer taken away. Very, very correct. If I start downloading ISIS propaganda, nothing seems to happen. It's the same problem. They should come down just as heavily on people who do that as they do on the paedophiles and such like.
Peter, thank you for your call in. Drive carefully with Bluetooth. 952-784-4000 if you wish to be involved with the conversation, or studio@talkradioeurope.com. Peter is for bringing back, Peter says, well, we still have treason laws, so...
Yeah, I think the treason laws are still there. Oh, sure. That's a safe bet.
Yes, it's there. It's just bringing a case against someone for treason. I mean, it is a very specific line of things you have to do. And again, a lot of this... terrorism and whatever does not rise to the level of treason. It is other crimes, but it's difficult to make it treason.
952-784-4000, the phone number. We've got a couple of calls coming in. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
I'm Kate Costa-Blanca.
Good morning.
Just seems what seems to me very good news. Imams refuse funeral prayers to, quote, indefensible, unquote, London Bridge attackers.
So they...
Imams.
They've taken away the funeral rites then for the attackers.
They've refused to do them for the London Bridge attackers, which is a sort of one of the most first out loud statements of the Muslim community against this kind of action.
Kate, thank you for that. That's a point. Thanks for letting us know that. We've got another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where you're calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning. I am Mohamed from Murcia.
Good morning.
We are fed up with this. Enough is enough. Why don't we create something in between to stop citizenship and to give people a cut or two cuts under the citizenship? You'll have all the rights as a Spanish people or whatever. We'll give you citizenship when you are 50.
Okay.
So that we can deport you. We can turn you back to your country. We'll give you something, one cut or two cuts, under citizenship. You'll have all the right to vote, to do whatever.
So if you like, a sort of provisional citizenship, then?
A provisional citizenship, and we will give it to you, will be under watch until you are 50.
Okay. That's an interesting concept. That's an interesting idea. We'll get back on this. Provisional citizenship. Nathan, your thoughts, please.
In many ways, that does happen, because nobody walks into a country and gets citizenship, you know, in the first hour and a half they're there. It usually is a long, many-year year process. You have to be there for so many years. Obviously, if you've, you know, come to the attention of the police and committed crimes and so on, you're not going to be granted citizenship. So there aren't necessarily categories specifically that people fall into, but I mean, citizenship is not something that any country grants lightly. I mean, there's residence, which is one thing, but that doesn't change the passport you hold.
That just allows you to buy a house or a car.
So, I mean, the problem with citizenship is, in most countries, if you are born in that country, you automatically become a citizen of that country, whether your parents are or not. And what do you do about people like that? I don't know how you give them a lesser citizenship because your parents are from another country. Then, I mean, you're getting into something that is so complicated and something that would require so many people and so much effort to keep track of it all that I'm not sure it's practical.
We've got another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Is that me?
It is indeed you, sir.
It's Robert.
Good morning, Robert.
There's one thing that I find difficult to understand is the number of policemen per head of population in Britain is falling. Now then, the safety and security of the nation relies on the eyes and the ears of the people. If you have a big presence of police on the streets, that in itself is a deterrent. A computer stuck in a police laboratory is not a deterrent because they can't see it. I remember when I was a young man, a young lad, there were policemen all over the place walking down the streets and, you know, and you've got them in Spain. I walk into Mijas every day and you see them. They're there. And that is the sight of the law. And it's that creates a deterrent. I mean, saying you're going to put more money into it doesn't mean it's going to work. This is what Theresa May says. What it is, you've got to get the ears and the eyes of the people to see what's going on and have the ability and the confidence. This is it, the confidence to report it. The local policeman wandering down the street in pairs or single man, he is a deterrent because he's there. And that's my view.
Robert, thanks for that. I mean, we've had a long thing about a lot of the police who were coming back had said they'd been warning about this because the police force in the UK has become reactive rather than proactive. There are very few bobbies on the beat, quote unquote, and they're not going into these communities. Therefore, they don't assimilate with these communities, and therefore gathering intelligence as you would do for having a walk around, as many will remember from the 70s and the 80s and earlier. That isn't done by policing anymore. It's a reactive police force.
There are definitely no-go areas for the police force in the United Kingdom specifically just now. These places are almost becoming lawless or their own form of law. The problem, I think, is the numbers of the police, obviously. I mean, we're down, so it's 20,000 we're down on previous years. And yes, okay, we need to pump more and more and more money into it to get more feet on the street, as it were. Yes, it is a deterrent if you see a copper going by. And personally, now I think, honestly, is the time that we have to reconsider how heavily armed the police are as well.
I mean, one of the things that we may remember, because we're kind of the same generation, is in the 70s and the early 80s, the riots that we had in Brixton and in Toxteth because of the Afro-Caribbean communities felt alienated from the police force. And the police force did work amongst the community to try and get, build a relationship.
Absolutely.
Can you see that sort of thing happening, being able to happen
absolutely
with these communities, which are perhaps a little styled more differently.
I think one of the problems that we are having, yes, I think it would work if you had a larger force and became more community oriented and more community involved and proactive, like you were saying, rather than reactive. But to turn around and say that is one thing. The other side of the coin is the fact that an awful lot of these people are not assimilating into the local culture of the United Kingdom. The prime example of that was one young lady who was on an interview on, I think it was Channel 4 the other day, who was banging on about multiculturalism and everybody should be getting on with everybody else and everybody should be following the rules that are set in the country that they live in. This girl was in a full-on burqa. She wasn't assimilating into our culture whatsoever, but she's the one that's banging on about it. You know, so you look at these things, and it goes both directions. The communities that are harbouring these people should be policed better, but the problem with that is an awful lot of these areas are literally, like I said before, no-go areas for the police force. They won't go into these areas. They are literally war zones.
I mean, how difficult do you think it's going to be for the police? Because they are predominantly still, after even though we've had community initiatives and recruitment drives, the British police force, especially the Metropolitan Police, is primarily is a white police force. So to go into these areas, where the majority of them are from. Countries such as Libya, Syria, Somalia, Pakistan, whatever.
Really, it's going to come down to when it all boils down to it. If you look at what happened at Westminster Bridge, had that police officer been armed, he would still be alive today.
We've got a caller on the line. Where are you calling from? Good morning, caller. Where are you calling from? What's your name? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Giles. It's Peter.
Good morning, Peter.
Right. Where was I going to start? So much there.
Right.
First off, the police seem to be taking it in the neck here, and many people are moaning about the numbers of police. Well, numbers aren't going to change anything. It's about how you use the numbers. We are the most, or Britain, I don't live there anymore, Britain is the most surveilled country in the world, in the Western world, definitely, and one of the most surveilled countries in the world. Those police officers arrived on the scene and put one behind the ear on each of those terrorists within 8 minutes. So you can say it's reactive, but it was superbly reacted, and they've done a fantastic job.
Agreed.
Agreed. And also, in the police force, I have friends, one of them I lost contact with recently, but Muslims, Arabs, working at the Met, who gave up because of the political correctness within the Met. That's the problem we have. I'm not 100% sure. I haven't spoken to a friend of mine that could confirm it with me, but those officers who shot those terrorists will probably be suspended for a while. They would definitely go through some sort of rigmarole for the next year, 18 months, because of political correctness, whether they did the right job, didn't do the right job, whether they were legitimate in pulling the trigger. This is one of the problems we have, is the political correctness all the time. Now, you talk about the resources of the police force. I watched something on the Met the other night, and you have 500 arrests every day, close to 200,000 arrests across the Met every year. You have 90,000 burglaries every year. You have 200 gangs across 32 boroughs. And when these kids go around snatching mobile phones from people on stolen scooters, when a police officer then entraps or grabs them, chases them, pins them to the floor, the local residents come out screaming at the police officers, surrounding the police officers, filming on their mobile phones. The police are being beaten to a point where many, many men and women of all colour, all religion, do not want to join the police force. Because we've gone from the old police force, like the media, like the local councils, they've been infiltrated by the left and they're unable to do their job. Now, second point, going back to what Mark said earlier, I have friends I've known for years, they used to be football hooligans, used to travel around Europe. One friend of mine was stopped when he was going to the Spanish, I think it was the World Cup or the European Cup, you probably know, Giles, but he went up into Portugal. Am I still there?
Yeah, he's still here. Yeah, that would be the Euros in Portugal.
Right, yeah. Well, he was stopped because he had a criminal record, he was stopped at Southampton Airport. They ran down, the police arrived, and they did this at airports all around Britain at the time, and they filmed them. And then they gave orders to these people that they could not travel. They took their passports, and they told them that whenever England played, they must report to a police station and must hand over their passports. A friend of mine still does that to this day. So when you talk about internment and taking passports, oh, you can't do that, they do it. They do it to white males who travel to watch sport. So they do it, and it can be done. So a watch list has to become a detain and deport list. And if they are British citizens, then they need to be detained. Nathan seems to think it's impossible. When Barack Obama left Guantanamo Bay, whether he wanted to close it or not, he was unable to from the powers that be. Now, we could have a Guantanamo Bay. Now, yes, there might be the odd innocent person, and I am the least likely to defend any oppressive government. But you have to remember that they are legitimately targeting us. They see us as legitimate targets at peaceful concerts with women and children, and your sister and my daughter and my uncle and my auntie. These people are ideologists. It's nothing to do with religion, and they are breaking the law. Now, Nathan says, oh, how do you prove? How do you prove? This guy on the watch list was in a documentary on Channel 4 with a black ISIS flag. And they said, we didn't watch him because we didn't feel he was threatening. A black ISIS flag, not threatening. Well, there's plenty of threatening people out there, and these ones need to be detained. And all these people have said, well, you're upsetting the Muslim community. Well, there's two Muslim communities, and the Muslim community in the last few days have banned all flights from Qatar, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia. They've acted. They won't let them travel. They won't let them fly. They won't do business with them. The UK government and European governments could stop doing business with some of these Arab countries right now. And I'm telling you, it's no coincidence that the IRA or ETA, as you spoke about last week, faded away during the boom times in Ireland and the boom times in Spain. And when you don't have boom times, you have gangsters like these that come to the fore. And remember, because I don't live in a cotton world world, I've seen stuff. There is, they hack off people's feet and heads, and they rape them, and they put implements into them, and they set a light to them. This is not just the odd bomb or the odd car. This is a disgusting ideology that needs to be stopped, and stopped immediately. And you can argue, Nathan, all day long, well, it won't stop it. No, it might not. But as Mark said, it will put a massive, massive hole in them. And they need to be aware.
Peter, thank you.
When I had my security company, if my doors were attacked by people and I added more security and added more security, you could guarantee more would come. And always an innocent girl, a good-looking young girl, would lose an eye because of a bottle flying around. But I tell you what, you go knock their door 5 o'clock in the morning when they're sober and you mark their card, and I'll tell you, it disappears. That's the way to deal with it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Peter, for those points.
TRE.
Talk Radio Europe. Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
You're listening to Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown. Joining me in the studio, Mark Connor and Nathan Thomas. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email. And the Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. If you wish to leave a post, we're discussing what can be done in the aftermath of yet another terrorist attack in a major UK city. We're talking about several things. Police numbers have been cut again, or seem to be decreased the number of police since Theresa May took control as Home Secretary. Was it in 2000 and I think it was 2006 she was Home Secretary. But Theresa May came on the Sunday, made a statement saying that enough was enough. Seeing as being strong, well, you know. She said enough was enough, something had to be done, and difficult conversations would have to take place. Uncomfortable conversations. Uncomfortable conversations for who, do you think?
Well, for everybody. I mean, nobody knows what to do. There is no simple answer to this. Enough is enough is kind of like Brexit is Brexit. It's a phrase that kind of jumps out at you, but when you think about it, it's, I don't know what that means. But the number, getting back just for a second to the numbers of police, I mean, part of the problem is in this technological age, what has happened, there's a finite amount of money that any government has to spend on policing. And for a number of years, I think a lot of it has gone into technical things, computers, cameras, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because people felt this was more worthwhile than more actual cops on the beat.
I think you're absolutely right there. I think it's along the lines of the National Health Service when they started bringing in more and more administration. That's where the money now goes in most of this, the public services, I think, is in administration and technical, like you say, computers and such like, and not actually putting physical people in the line of fire, if you want to put it bluntly. There are far, far fewer frontline police officers. And it's one of the callers actually said about, people have to get together, communities have to speak to each other and to the authorities as well. And that's one of the big problems, I think, especially in this particular situation. You brought it up earlier on when you said the clever ones don't say what they're going to do. And that I get 100%. That's true. And it's actually an awful lot harder than that now because even with networking in terror cells and stuff, there are so many lone wolves now, and you cannot, under any circumstances, you can't predict when somebody's walking down the street, jumps in a bus, and then plows into 20 people. Yeah. You know, that's just not possible to predict. But that then brings me full circle back to my initial point, which is, if they're on a watch list, do something about it. Be it deportation. Somebody else said about putting them in prison. Well, I don't want my taxpayers' money going to these guys. I know it's a fine line I'm walking. You know, do you stay in the tightrope or not? And other people say, oh, deportation never works. It can't possibly work. It's never been done. Ask an Australian.
Why would you ask an Australian?
Because that's how we started that country, basically. Colonisation over and above the people that are actually there. I'm not going to go down that road.
Yes.
That was letting my mouth work before
I'm going to go to the phone.
Okay,
Mark.
Good idea.
We've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. Where are you calling from? What's your name? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Giles. It's Sean Fuencarola.
Good morning, Sean.
Just a comment about the wider angle on all this terrorism. Mark's comments, excellent, by the way. Thanks, Mark. But we also need to look at MI5 and the successive British governments, particularly as relates to Libya since 2010. And, of course, as we all know, Theresa May has been a big part of that government. Now, there's something called called the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group. It thrived in Manchester, and it was cultivated and used by MI5 for more than 20 years. It's a terrorist organization, of course, prescribed by Britain as such, and it is, quote-unquote, part of the wider global Islamic extremist movement.
Just run me that one by me again. What was called the Libyan?
It's called the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group.
Right.
Nicknamed the Manchester Boys. Now, one of the Manchester Boys has turned out to be the infamous Salman Abedi. Now, the smoking gun is that when Theresa May was Home Secretary, LIFG, and it's quite interesting, by the way, just because it's hard to remember all these acronyms, but it's quite similar to LIFE. You just go two letters down from LIFE, and you've got LIFG, which, of course, is anti-LIFE jihadists, were allowed to travel unhindered across Europe and encouraged to engage in battle, quote-unquote, first to remove Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, and then to join al-Qaeda-affiliated groups in Syria. Then last year, the FBI reportedly placed Abedi on a terrorist watch list and warned MI5 that his group was looking for a political target, quote-unquote, in Britain. Why wasn't he apprehended and the network around him prevented from planning and executing the atrocity on the 22nd of May? Now, these questions arise because of recent events which have made it so clear that we are sitting upon an MI5 and a deep state intervention simply for geopolitical reasons. We didn't like Gaddafi.
Yeah.
Gaddafi was a secularist. We wanted to take him out. He also had the absolute cheek to to propose an African-based petrodollar currency and Middle Eastern-based one, and that was the final straw, so he had to be taken out. We now get the blowback from that. It's slightly reminiscent of the wonderful Sherlock Holmes story, the Speckled Band, which some of you may know, where essentially there's a deadly swamp adder, and the wicked father-in-law is trying to kill his stepdaughter, who's about to get married, which would therefore hit his inheritance. So what happens? The snake gets driven back up the rope by Sherlock Holmes, who comes back to bite him.
Right. Well, I mean, yes, we've never had swamp adders on the viewpoint before, but thank you for that one. You can argue that we have always panel supported groups like the Mujahideen, for example, in Afghanistan. Which then obviously you can arm these people all you want, but then you have to disarm them afterwards. Had an email in a post at on the Facebook page on Talk Radio Europe Official. Ewan says, if we consider these terrorist acts in Great Britain as war, in capitals, then go to a war state as happened in the 1940s, when the British imprisoned the Germans living in the country, and then the Americans rounded up the Japanese living in the US, so why don't the British round up the Muslims and close the mosques? Too much PC. So that's one point of view you can leave on the website or on the Facebook page as well.
If you round them all up, a lot of work isn't going to get done in the country.
Well, I'm just trying to think where you would put the large Muslim population.
There is that.
Yes, and if you're looking perhaps at a way of recruitment, of a recruitment drive, I think yes.
I think one of the things that a lot of the problems are stemming from people who are actually being put in prison for whatever. There's a lot of radicalization happening in the prisons at the moment, and obviously the straightforward way to deal with that, as far as I'm concerned, is to have one major facility that anybody that's vaguely related to or attached to any of these groups, they all go to the same place. That way you can radicalise all you want because it's already there. It doesn't make any difference.
Called Guantanamo Bay, and we know how the world has reacted to that.
Yeah, but you say that, right?
Everybody.
Yeah,
well, yes, I do, because the world has reacted to that.
But the only reason that people reacted to Guantanamo Bay the way they have was because of the torture situation down there. If that had never came to the fore in the first place, if that had never happened, if it had been used as a facility to hold these people, then this conversation wouldn't be happening as far as Guantanamo Bay is concerned, because the only reason that came to the fore was because of people getting tortured there. And that's what upsets the people, not the holding them. That's a different thing.
We have different to go to a point we have here. From Felipe, may I say, in reference to recent events, that they're not here seeking revenge. Saddam, Gaddafi and Assad lead secular societies. These people oppose those leaders because of that. They're here because they can and will. This isn't payback for taking out Gaddafi. These are the ones that pulled him out of the tunnel and then killed him. Their ideology is to subdue everything that isn't them, and our attempts to secure the resources has removed the one thing that stop them from doing it sooner, those very same leaders. They're losing ground in Syria because they cannot fight a conventional war against the West, so now we have a guerrilla war of a new kind. But this is not the VEC in the foothills outside of Saigon. The Fifth Column is well established and taking recruits. For all the love and peaceful dreams, hatred holds the knife, and we are hated, not for our freedoms, nor for anything, but simply because we are not them. We do not adhere to their ideology. So stop asking why, stop wondering, because you and I and most likely everybody you know is the reason. The problem appears to be treated very much like the issue around drugs. The police get the dealers on the street, but very rarely the supplier, and even less up the chain. So who is turning the sons and daughters of law-abiding citizens into bombs? And how and where did they find out that that's okay? Who's hooked them on the opiate of radicalization? The further that we go, the more we find that somewhere our governments have been successfully taking their cut for decades, and across party politics we've been supplying those that support those ideals with money and weapons, thinking we could control them. But like a gambler, with the allure of one last spin of the wheel, we never held a moment's thought that they would come back to bankrupt us or to our own front doors. These are no revenge killings, they're honor killings on a mass scale. Thank you, Felipe.
Anyway. Yeah, absolutely. I almost completely agree with that. That there is no actual reason for... right, let me get my head around this. Basically, what the gentleman's saying is correct. The Islamic fundamentalists, the ISIS and all the rest of it, they are not trying to take back a country. They are not trying to protect their belongings or their homeland or anything like that. What they are doing is they are trying to eradicate anybody, and I mean anybody, who does not follow their particular style of belief.
Their creed, yeah.
That's it. Now, that being said, what can anybody do about that? The only thing you can do about a virus which is infecting a system is to eradicate the virus.
We'll take a short break and back.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Listening to Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown. 952-78-4000, the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. We had an email in from Craig. Richard Littlejohn in the Daily Mail said that yesterday, we are at war. If we declare war, we can, under the Geneva Convention, call these soldiers, quote-unquote, combatants, which means we can intern them without trial, which was the US justification for Guantanamo. Nathan, you wanted to say something about the police numbers.
Yeah, the numbers. But just commenting on that.
Indeed.
I mean, yes, you can do that. But the problem with all of these is, how do you recognize which ones are the bad guys until they actually do something? And this has been the problem. And yes, Guantanamo, they could pick up people. They were on the battlefield in Afghanistan or wherever. And you can do that. But where do you – who gets to decide which ones you pick up? Are you going to pick up every Muslim in the country just because they're Muslim? That seems a little extreme. How do you – I mean, police investigated – this guy back in 2005, from what they could figure out at that point, somebody decided that he wasn't at that point a threat. And there has been nothing since then, till he actually did the attack on Saturday night, that brought him back to any greater attention.
The same thing has happened in so many different walks of life, though, with authorities. If you look at the situation you have with domestic abuse, how many times were the police called? They knew that this guy was beating his wife or his kids or whatever. They knew he was doing it, but they could not prove anything, so nothing could be done. The same thing happens when you look at this, the child is being abused, and social services know about it. They've been to the house 20 times, but they can't prove anything. There must come a point where, if you are being watched for something and they know, they cannot prove, I know the sky is blue, but I can't prove it.
Okay.
You know, there has to be a point where you say, like Theresa May did, God help me, I'm going to quarter. Enough is enough. You know, and enough generally is. I think the big problem we have here, and there's something that hasn't been touched on yet, and it's a serious problem. And if the authorities don't figure something out and quick, you're going to see vigilantism on the street. It's going to happen, and that's the last thing anybody wants.
I agree with that, but what you are basically saying is the laws are there, the laws are to be obeyed, and if people break the law, they are caught, convicted, jailed, whatever. But you're saying, well, even if we know it, even if we can't prove it, we'll take this one anyway.
There has to be a point, though, Nathan.
Who gets to decide?
That's something that we need to get to grassroots on, and that's my second point on that, is exactly that. If we don't do something, if that isn't figured out, if we don't get somebody to make a decision on this, then the people will make the decision for them.
And we've got some callers on the line. Good morning, Coolie. Good morning, Coolie. You're live on TRE.
Good morning. It's Margaret from Torre Molinas calling.
Good morning, Margaret.
And I'm very interested in all of this, of course, but I think our Scottish friend has got a very good idea. And what I would suggest is, I heard my brother said this, he's not around to phone you, and it is that, what about these people who are on the watch list being tagged and monitored in this wonderful electronic age of ours? Surely anybody who is on a watch list, there's a good reason for that person to be on it, for starters. And if that person is tagged and monitored, well, then that would be some way of keeping tabs on what they're up to. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much for that, Margaret. Presumably,
if we tag them, though, I mean, we could say, well, they're going. We'd have to keep. Presumably, we would tag them to know where they were, or unless you said, well, you're not allowed. You're only allowed to be in this certain area.
But the point is, first of all, a watch list is for somebody who needs to be watched. Not because they've done anything, but because maybe they will.
A watch list is exactly that. It's for watching people. And I do get what you're saying with the, if you tag them, then they know they're being watched. That's a bit of a giveaway.
And also just the realistic what it takes to tag and monitor 20,000 people. I mean, she said, oh, well, we have computers stuff.
Actually, that isn't that difficult, Nathan.
Right.
No,
okay.
It's not that difficult. And I have an app on my phone called Flight Radar, right? I can watch pretty much any flight, a commercial flight, that's in the air, on the face of the earth at any time. I can tell you where it is and what the number is.
Why are you doing that?
Yes, but you can do that.
Because I'm really sad and I like aeroplanes. Right.
That system has been set up and it's there, and all you're doing is tapping into something
exactly
and watching.
Exactly the same thing.
But you've got to, first of all, you're going to have to, what are you going to do, implant these people with a chip? Put a tag on?
We already have tags for people. We already have the asthma
tags. Go into costing what it takes to do
why,
that.
Why is it all about money? Why is it got to be
because,
about money?
Because
no,
the country
no, I'm sorry,
only
I'm sorry,
has
I'm gonna, no.
so much money.
That's not true, and you know it. Listen, the bottom line is this. Well, how do you put a price on the life of an 8-year-old child?
Very honestly, you have to. I mean,
What?
The country can only afford, and this is the point I was getting to with the police. I mean, you only have so much money. A lot of it has been put into technology because the decision has been made that putting cameras all over the place and monitoring those cameras and several people watching dozens of cameras is more efficient than putting out, 50 more people on the street.
Mm.
That's correct or not,
look,
is an argument.
Somebody said earlier on, and absolutely correct, well, more or less correct, the UK is massively cameraed up. There's cameras everywhere.
Yes.
And specifically in London. London's the most surveilled city in the world. Now, we do have a lot of people sitting and watching these screens. We also have face recognition systems, which the computer systems that we have now are so far advanced. You can track people by face recognition. Now, there's no reason why that same sort of system can be used countrywide. Unless you live under a rock, you are going to be on a camera or several cameras just going down to the shop to buy a pint of milk.
That is very true. But what has happened, and especially in London, I mean, they have devoted the resources that they have to that kind of policing rather than putting more bobbies on the street. Also, the numbers, they say there are fewer police now per person per civilian.
Which is ridiculous. It shouldn't be like that.
Well, but remember, the population of the country from 1950, pick a number, pick a date, how much has the population increased? And
I'll throw a rock into the middle of that. A lot of that is down to immigration as well.
But again, you can stop immigration if you want to. You haven't done it. Okay, the immigration is there. The population has grown. If the population grows 20%, and if you take the ratio in 1950 of how many police per person, you'd be adding 20% more to the police force, over a period of time. And again, the police force costs money. I hate to go back to money all the time.
We are in a state of perpetual war here, really.
Okay.
We really, really are. And there has to be a way okay, let's talk about...
How about a security tax? They tax every citizen X percent of their income for security.
I don't see a problem with that.
Do you think Parliament is going to propose that? And
they already have it. It's called you're paying in for the defence.
No, I'm talking about on top of what you're doing now, because the defence, you can't reduce the defence. I mean, defences.
Nobody's asking anybody to reduce anything. Look, there's lots of different reasons that this is happening, and one of the reasons that it is happening is the fact that, like I said earlier on, people are becoming desensitised to it. They're not reacting the way they should. They're not reacting with the outrage that they should. They go on TV and they say, "Oh, we feel terrible," and all the rest of it. We want to do something. That's fine. But you take somebody like Sadiq Khan, who's turning around and telling people, "Look, you just have to get on with it because that's where we are now in London."
We just have to get on with it. We'll come back to more of these subjects with Viewpoint, news at the top of the hour, and then Spanish news up next.